America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey. So we have survived the pandemic, even though it's still ongoing. We are still very much alive.
Yeah. I'm kind of over sheltering in place, though. It's getting a little old.
Yeah. This episode is going to be for April 24th, 2020. And here in Georgia, they're going to start reopening shit next week.
I thought it was going to be today.
It kind of starts today, but it's more of like a rollout type of thing.
I see.
So basically, you know, tattoo parlors, hairdressers, shit like that will start reopening.
Okay.
And I 100% expect to see a absolute unbelievable spike in COVID-19 cases in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because our fucking governor is bound and goddamn determined to get this thing, to get this state back open, and he doesn't care how many people he kills to do it. So, yippee.
Capitalism.
Yeah. Also, GameStop's going to start reopening, too.
Yeah.
Guess you'll and
be able to get your Final Fantasy VII Remake at some point.
I hope. I still got to call and see if they've got any new copies, because I'm not sure if they've shipped out more copies yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, should we go ahead and keep doing the sort of status report as far as COVID-19 stuff is concerned?
Because well, I hope not, because I haven't really been keeping up with it.
Yeah, it's kind of leveled off at this point. Basically, what we're going to do more or less is, I guess we're just going to sort of save that for right now. Because we got a whole fucking COVID-19 dump truck for you later in the show.
Yeah.
I don't think really anything major has changed other than the fact that a lot of people are sort of getting into the idea of slowly reopening stuff and going back to normal, more or less, probably prematurely. But so, like, up in Canada, what is it like right now, Phil?
So they're talking about potentially slowly opening by the middle of May.
Yeah.
But nothing has been, like, finalized yet. Trudeau and the provincial PMs are still talking about it, figuring out what's going on. As for here, well, we're still in shelter-in-place order, so nothing's really changed there. Some people still think it's a big hoax and are not practicing social distancing or any of that stuff. Yeah. So,
Lord, I hope they don't have as many people in your country like that they have in mine.
Well, we got a few. They're very vocal, and that's kind of how it is, I guess.
Boy.
As for here, well, in my particular town, there hasn't been a case yet, so knock on wood that continues. So, so far, so good.
All right. And I guess Pat said he hadn't really been paying attention. But then again, I guess if that's the reason, then nothing significant has happened in Utah.
No, I hear about the occasional death here and there, but still nothing that would make Utah a particular outlier, which is kind of surprising because we never really got a full shutdown order.
Yeah. So. Well, I think maybe the desert climate has something to do with it. I don't know.
Wouldn't be out of the question.
Chris, what about over in Ohio? Anything significant over there?
I believe we passed 15,000 cases.
Ugh.
Let's see. What's the death toll? I think we're at 690 deaths, which is like another 200 some increase. It's about like 50% from last week, so
yeah,
a little less, but still marching towards 1,000 pretty quickly.
Yeah. But other than that, has there been any talk of reopening, or is there still like
there is for the first?
The 1st of May?
Yeah, but I don't think DeWine has put out much in the way of information on that, suggesting that it's not going to be like a major reopening.
Yeah.
Of sorts. But yeah, earlier today I was out going to my grandma's house because her remote decided to stop working. Or that's what I was told. My mom was over there and could not figure it out. And I got over there, figured out that it was the remote was in the wrong room. It was a dish TV set up. And so I guess specific remotes are synced to specific receivers.
Mm. Yeah.
I managed to put them in the wrong rooms. So I pushed the button on it saying, you know, locate receiver. And it's like, that's not the one I'm holding. I could hear it beeping in the distance. I had to go find it. It's like, okay, this is your problem. The remote you labeled for this room is not for this room. So I spent this time getting over there for a very simple solution. But anyway, the drive over, it looked like it was like the first day of spring. It's about 60 degrees today, and I saw tons of cars out, tons of people going around. Not too much in like big groups, but like a lot of families just walking on the streets, taking a walk or whatever. Doing that kind of stuff. And I was like, I know it's nice out, but you're also not supposed to be like acting like it's summer, normal summer, when it's not. And at work, it's been still the same kind of people being fucking nasty assholes.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. By the time we get this done, we're going to have to name some like king assholes. It's going to be those people that can't fucking just put their gloves.
Yeah, and you know this. Yeah, and we all know that this shit's going to be coming back probably around the fall. Hmm.
They're doing exactly what we did with the Spanish flu.
Yep,
in 1918, where we got warmer, went down a little bit.
Yeah,
people threw parades and shit, saying, "Oh, it's over."
And then the fall, we had the second wave, and it ended up killing more people than the first wave did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are getting fucking cocky because they can't fucking just stay home.
Yeah. I'm hoping, against all hope, that once summer rolls around and the cases start going down, hopefully that's still what's going to happen, that smarter, more intelligent people in our government will start prepping up for when the second round hits around probably October or November.
Yeah, the CDC has not been mincing words.
Yeah.
Yeah, the CDC has not been mincing words about a second wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being like, worse than this.
It's like, guys, we're going to be, it's going to, this shit's coming back and we're going to need to prepare for this shit. So, you know.
People don't realize it's going to be a good year or more before we can get anywhere close back to normal.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, here in Georgia, like I already said, our governor is getting ready to reopen the state. A bunch of places reopened today. I actually think, believe it or not, I would not be surprised if a bunch of places already opened a few days ago once word got out that he was planning to start reopening stuff on Friday, because that's kind of how shit goes down here. But as far as, like, infection toll and stuff like that, right here, right now, we are currently looking at, let's see here, about 22,500 known cases, about 900 people have died. Here in Georgia, we have about 29 confirmed infected cases, but still no death. So, you know, that's good. And once again, there's literally only two counties in the entire state that are reporting nothing. And I'm pretty sure the reason that is because there's only like five people in them. Mm. This is like the remote parts of Georgia we're talking about. Mm. But yeah, so with that out of the way, we can now go on to our normal routine. And as always, we'll start with Phil. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
Wheel of Time. I'm about two-thirds of the way through book 9. motoring through those. Although books 8 and 9 were shorter than the usual books.
Mm-hmm.
So that was so I'm pretty enjoying that. And then I tried to take a walk earlier this week and got caught in a random snowstorm. So that was nice.
I just expect that that's just something that happens living in Canada. You're just driving down the road and then all of a sudden, oh, snowstorm.
January through March, sure, you could kind of expect that. But late April, it's like, huh.
Not so much.
That's strange by anybody's measure. So you should talk, Pat.
You live in Utah. It snowed in July one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it would still be classified under not so much.
Yeah, it's definitely in the not so much category.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So I've been waiting for the weather to stabilize, and hopefully it does, and I can start, you know, at least doing some walks around the block and start shaking off some of this stir-crazying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's kind of it for me.
All right, Pat, what about you?
Oh, this week's been an adventure. So I mentioned this last week. My bank account finally got stimulated, and in addition to that, I got that really good paycheck from the overtime I'd been working. And so a lot of Amazon orders got placed.
Hmm.
So among them, some cleaning supplies for my apartment. And this is probably the cleanest it's been since I really got settled in here.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a bunch of other odds and ends. Like I said, cleaning supplies, an 8 terabyte hard drive, noise canceling headphones, some Gorilla tape because I'm going to be installing an air conditioner here for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
A heavy duty chain because I've got to secure the fence gate because people are apparently using my back porch as a hangout and that's not cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, what I didn't realize was how much of this stuff was going to be coming from Amazon directly rather than their, you know, the third parties that do business there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got the hard drive, the noise canceling headphones, and the chain and the Gorilla tape all in the same package. And now I'm probably on some kind of list. But I don't even have a plan for the hard drive. I just know that I need the extra space for whatever might come along, especially with the data caps lifted for the pandemic.
Hmm.
So I'm sure I'll find something to use.
All right.
But yeah, that's been my week.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I've been pretty busy this week with work and all that, so I haven't done too much. I did watch all of the most recent season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is great. Not really too much to say about it. They do a lot of fun stuff there. Some good cameos. And also watched Blazing Saddles, which is on Hulu now.
Yes.
Which is great, and definitely would not be allowed to be made today.
Well, why would you want to?
I think there could be some interesting aspects of it.
I mean, you could make it today, but the context would be completely different because that movie was made during a specific point in time meant to skewer a very specific kind of thing that was happening.
Yeah, very much in the wake of civil rights movement.
No, more specifically, okay, so I'm going to try and keep this short. Here's the thing you need to know about Blazing Saddles. It, like all of Mel Brooks' movies, is meant to satirize something. You know, his movie Young Frankenstein was meant to satirize the old, you know, monster movies. You know, History of the World Part 1 is meant to be, you know, make fun of all those old historical epics that used to be everywhere. Robin Hood Men in Tights was basically Robin Hood Prince of Thieves. Like, it was almost the exact same goddamn movie. Blazing Saddles was meant to basically be an enormous takedown of not just, the Western, but a very specific kind of Western. Specifically, the quote-unquote wholesome Western, which used to be, like, especially during, like, the 50s, that was pretty much, like, over two-thirds of what was on television at any given time. And the thing is, all of those shows basically created these really sanitized, really bloodless, really child-friendly view of what the Wild West was. And the whole point of Blazing Saddles was to basically tear the veil off of that whole thing and show you that, this is exactly, you know, like everything about that movie is in some way meant to satirize parts of the Westerns. The fact that, you know, for the rest, and when the Indians show up, when, you know, it's like Bart was a little kid and he's with his family and they're on the wagon train and everything. And, you know, Mel Brooks shows up as like an Indian chief. That's because back in old Hollywood, it was basically standard to get more darker skinned Jewish actors to play the Native Americans.
Okay.
You know, the fact that, you know, eventually the movie gets so out of hand that it actually breaks the movie and they end up invading other movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's meant to show like how sort of facile and, you know, how fake it all is.
Yeah.
You know? It's why like all the settlers, instead of being shown as like good, wholesome people, they're all inbred morons. Like, there's a reason why everyone in Rock Ridge has the name Johnson.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed that part.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just playing off of the generic name.
Yeah. Also, because there's a reason why they throw the N-word around so much in that movie. It's because back in that era, they sort of threw the N-word around like a hacky sack.
Yeah.
So, actually historically accurate, believe it or not.
I could see a new like remake of that being about the notion of white people using that name, that word, when they have no rights to it.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the question I always ask when people say you couldn't make a Blazing Saddles today. It's, why would you want to? You know, it was good already the first time, and it had a purpose that it served. Trying to make it today would just not make any sense.
Yeah. I could see, like, Taika Waititi doing...
but it would basically be almost a completely different movie.
Yeah, I think that would be the point. It wouldn't have to be necessarily Blazing Saddles, just doing a riff off of this kind of movie, but for modern day, what the N-word whole argument around that on both sides has turned into.
Yeah. Also, they already kind of made another funny satirical Western a few years ago. It was called 1,000 Ways to Die in the West. It was a Seth MacFarlane movie. It kind of bombed. So they already did try to go ahead and do Blazing Saddles again, and it sucked.
Yeah, though I'd give it to somebody that's actually good at doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
Who doesn't just beat you over the head with references
in
the most obvious way. But yeah, also been watching the NFL draft, seeing how they're doing the whole remote thing, which is kind of wild. Because Roger Goodell's basically announcing this stuff from his basement. And obviously, being a rich guy, it's a very nice basement. Also has a Kinect in there for some reason, an Xbox One Kinect.
Okay.
Which I'm like, did the Microsoft deal go that far? He's just never removed it for whatever reason. And I think it's still plugged in because the Xbox logo's lit up.
Mm-hmm.
Plugged into something. I don't know what. I don't think I see an Xbox or anything like that in there. So who knows? Because whenever he's talking to doing quick little chats with players, it's through like an iPad or probably a Surface, but he's doing it through like that kind of thing. And it's pretty interesting seeing some of how the different coaches and GMs are broadcasting from their homes, which results in people seeing that Jerry Jones, owner of the Cowboys, is broadcasting from his $250 million super yacht.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case you need to know what how much he ultimately cares about how good or bad the team is.
Yeah.
Because he makes money either way. And I think Cliff Kingsbury, the coach of the Arizona Cardinals, who just got there last season, was in a house that I believe cost like $4.4 million. And is very much one of those, this is a house made to be expensive for no real functional reason. Because it's, you know, a huge, like a living room with big glass walls that, glass doors like opening up to the backyard where there's like patches of grass because it's Arizona and the grass doesn't naturally grow in these sort of places. With like a fire pit in the middle of it, which it's Arizona. It's 110 degrees at the the peak. You don't need a fire pit for this show unless you're just rich and it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
It's that kind of weird whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's like a bar on the other side and some stuff like that. And like this maybe pool of water or something like that, maybe. It was supposed to be like a wet bar with a pool around it or something, but it's kind of crazy looking. And meanwhile, like Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs, the coach, he's just in his like basement. There's like some guys looks like, oh, we just had the people go to IKEA real quick and get you a desk or whatever and set it up. The fun one was John Lynch, GM of the San Francisco 49ers, whose daughters were hanging out behind. Two of them wearing 49ers shirts. The other one wearing a shirt that said football and chill. And they were, I'm pretty sure they're underage. And so I think she was definitely trolling her dad. And he had not realized what that meant. And
who knows now?
By the time they made a second pick, they were nowhere to be seen. it was also very late by that point, like 11 o'clock here Eastern time. Would have been like 8 o'clock there. But yeah, it was kind of crazy seeing like these different setups for, I believe, Philly's GM. Their IT guy was just hanging out in a like an RV on the in his driveway. So, you know, very much low rent. Kind of, we need a guy here just in case, but he also can't be in the house with social distancing and all that. So he needs to be basically close enough to get a quick call and be there in a minute kind of thing. So, yeah. Blair's doing the same thing, having lots of fun with some of that stuff. And I saw one of the reporters on Twitter who's like a more business guy was talking about the different deals for players to have like Pizza Hut delivered to their house. It's for a sponsorship, that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, that's pretty interesting. And talk about how I think coaches were supposed to have, coaches and GMs were supposed to have like all the, any like snacks or drinks supposed to be from the, you know, exclusive sponsors. And I think Sean Payton did not have it, have that. He had like the wrong kind of pop. I think it was I forget what it was, but like stuff was like slightly off brand, even though it's like, who gives a shit? The guy survived coronavirus. We let him do what he wants. That kind of thing. But yeah, that was pretty interesting. The only problem is it's fucking slow as hell. Cause I think Roger Goodell has a guy that literally just mans the printer to print out the announcements that come in. That kind of thing.
Drafts are already slow as it is.
Yeah. When you got a guy that's just waiting at a printer instead of having a maybe more technologically savvy way of getting stuff in. But yeah, like the first round that they had last night was about 4 hours, just over 4 hours, like 8 p.m. to just after midnight.
Wow.
For 32 picks, which is not especially fast.
That's not optimal.
Yeah. Today it's a little bit faster. Just started at 7, and we're a good way through the second round. So it's also partially because the picks are like 5 minutes they get to make their pick. whereas yesterday was 10 minutes. And you could tell that there was a lag in getting the announcements made because the next team would start. Like, oh, they got like 5 minutes to go because it took them 5 minutes to get everything verified and announced, yeah, kind of stuff. So it was interesting to see like this high-end production where you've got two feeds from each of the team's official people. And I think they had 15 fans, 15 webcams from fans to put on a screen behind for like booing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which was weird, especially for some of them that did not have actual video footage. I was like, what, you couldn't get two or three more people with webcams to boo or whatever at the picks or the Roger Goodell announcing it, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's been pretty interesting. As for games, been playing Rocket League. Weeks up, still continuing to play it. So now at this point, Heatseeker is gone, and people on their Twitter are very much like, we need this back with a ranked mode. Do it now, kind of thing, because it's a very popular mode now.
We have your dog.
Yeah. So that's been a lot of fun. American Truck Sim, been playing that. They put out a big new update this week that overhauled the audio engine, which I think has some issues just from what I've seen in the forums. For that, it's messed up a little bit. But the other cool thing they've done is they allow you to roll the windows up and down now on your truck. So now you can get like ambient audio out of that instead of – so the way you got audio from outside the truck before is you literally just moved your camera to the left all the way and you just looked out the back of your car essentially or back of your truck like you're looking behind you, which was one of the ways you could – do the parking stuff when you get your trailer to the destination. But now you can just kind of have the windows up or down, and it's able to account for sort of like how much of the general like sound you should get while driving, which is pretty cool. The only problem is I mapped it to the D-pads or the arrow keys on my keyboard because I couldn't figure out an easy way to map it onto my Steam controller. And then I accidentally mapped them in the opposite directions.
Ooh.
Up to go down, down to go up.
Awkward.
Which made sense when I was looking at them, but I didn't read them right, I guess. I was looking at the mapping, so I'll have to fix that next time. Been playing more Animal Crossing. Yeah, my Nook's Cranny has gotten upgraded, which means it was out of commission all of yesterday. So I ended up selling my turnips the day before when it was a good bit of profit. Still working on more stuff in that game, but yeah, still going. And last Sunday I streamed No Man's Sky, checking out the Exomech update,
mm-hmm,
which getting that stuff unlocked was a lot simpler than I thought it was. I thought I had to go down this whole quest line around sort of expanding your base. And instead, I just had to go up to the anomaly ship and specifically unlock those parts because they're some of the base building stuff that's exclusive to the ship up there, which I get. But I'm also like, just put that on the screen I have in the base that I can use to unlock stuff because that's just basic. Cause like some of the basic tech stuff you can use for your base. For batteries and solar panels and all that kind of stuff, and the rest are like here's like prefab stuff for building a base out of wood, like the walls and all that kind of stuff. Same for concrete and steel, I think. Whereas all the other tech stuff for the different exo craft are up there, and a bunch of other stuff as well that you kind of need if you want to do some of the bigger updates they've added to that stuff. But yeah, the mech is pretty cool. It controls differently than you might think. It's not necessarily like you point one direction, you immediately start going in that direction.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to give yourself some room to move around. Because when you're holding, if you're like pointing like left or right, if you want to go straight, it has to go, to the side a bit as it sort of slowly turns around. I assume there are upgrades I can get to make it turn a little bit faster, get a little faster. But that's like the one downside, because the rest of it's all pretty useful. So your mech can, the primary way you get around is basically like a boost jump.
Yeah.
You can just kind of fly around for a good bit. I think I was trying to go to like a freighter crash site that was saying like 22 minutes, but every time I did a full jump, it took about a minute off of it, and it reloads pretty quick, so you can kind of get around pretty quickly. It can smash through any obstacles, so you don't have to necessarily worry about getting stuck on plants and shit. The only problem is when you break that stuff, you don't get the materials out of it. So if you want to do that, you have to equip a mining laser to it and actually shoot that stuff, which has pretty good distance on that. I also have a cannon that shoots these like these big shots, which is another way you can mine out stuff if you want. And I think there's a third sort of laser I have that can also do that. I had a little bit of trouble. I had some like weird issues just kind of showing you the meter for mining stuff. So, you know, like how much longer you have to hold it down to finish it off. So there'll be times where I'm maybe too close or just looking at it weirdly or, you know, whatever. So there's still some work, things you have to work out on that stuff, but it's pretty cool. You get more storage space. You get, it doesn't, get affected by any of the hazards on the planet.
Mm.
So you don't have to worry about heat or any of that stuff. I think it's just purely battery power, which you can, if you're mining stuff at a good rate, you can get enough. I think it's just carbon or condensed carbon you can use on that. You can just sort of keep refilling it pretty easily. And I believe there's supposed to be an upgrade at some point to get yourself like a solar panel so you can kind of keep going. So the geobay you put down as well. The problem is my base on the planet I use on, at least first set up, was on the in the air, basically, in this big structure in the air. So getting a mech up there is not the easiest, but I figured out that I can get up there fairly easily with just my just in my regular exosuit. And the geobay just has a, you know, bring the mech back here kind of thing. So you kind of respawn it back in the base without any worries. So it's a really cool and useful item just for exploring the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of hoping the next big thing they add is a way to like map out the planet itself. So you can like know where these different structures are and all those kind of things. Because right now you're kind of just at the mercy of what your ping can see in the immediate immediate surroundings around you. Or you get like a waypoint from, there's various ways you can get waypoints, but that point out places of interest. So, and the mech itself also has ways of generating that stuff as well. So if you need to get to some shit the fuck up, you know, it can do that for you. Say, hey, you should go this direction for like a secure base that you can go, you know, destroy, essentially. So it's a really cool update and a lot of cool stuff for people to play with that game. Probably build for to make the best use of this mech that's in this game. So, yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. So first and foremost, yeah, I am still playing Red Dead Redemption 2. I actually finished Arthur's part of the story last night. Oh, fuck it. This game's a few years old now. I'll go ahead and spoil it. Basically, the last, like, fifth of the game, you actually don't play as Arthur Morgan. You play as John Marston a few years after the events of this game, but before the events of the first Red Dead Redemption. And, yeah, just goddamn, the Red Dead Redemption 2, there are times in that game where it can be not necessarily frustrating, but because they rely so much on the use of realism that it can at times be at the detriment to the actual game. Like the first time you see like Arthur, you know, skinning an animal that you find, you know, out in the wilderness that you hunted, you know, it's interesting and it's really well done. But he doesn't have to do it every single time he ends up skinning another type of that same animal, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely like the Animal Crossing thing. Or mm-hmm. the Zelda thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's the red rupee. It's worth this much.
Gratuitous cutscene.
And it's like, yeah. Oh, you didn't have to tell me. It's like the 30th one I've gotten.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't need to know this information anymore.
Although, I do love watching people reacting to that part of the game, because I guess for some reason a lot of people didn't realize how, that's how you do it, dude.
Yeah.
That's how you skin an animal. That's how you get a hide. I did it once when I was a kid. I didn't enjoy it, but that's how it's done. Also, something about, you know, when you end up skinning a rabbit, and unlike in the other animals, like, you know, the big ones like the deer or wolves or coyotes or whatever, where, you know, you have to, like, get the knife out and slowly remove the hide. Yeah, with, like, smaller animals like squirrels and rabbits, basically you just have to stick the thumb into the anus and just tear the damn thing off. Like, just in one go. Yeah. So other than that, books, still reading that Elmore Leonard, still amazed by it, still kicking myself that I had only decided to read him now. And, anime. So I recently restarted my subscription for Funimation. And so I'm, amongst other things, I'm watching the second season to the Legend of the Galactic Heroes Dinothys, you know, the newer version of it that they recently made. Also watching all of the Tenchi Muyo, because they basically got all the Tenchi Muyo on Funimation.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's the original Tenchi Muyo OVA, Tenchi Universe, Tenchi GPX, or is it GXP? I can't remember. All that stuff. There's a bunch of it.
Yeah.
But goddamn, there are a few anime series that were made back in the 90s that were as fun as Tenchi was.
Yeah.
Also got back to watching more of Noir. I've talked about that already. Again, if you have not watched Noir, I 100% recommend it. It's a Girls with Guns anime that is really heavy on the plot and writing, and it is amazing. I will admit that, you know, it's late 90s anime, which means it's late 90s anime animation, and with all that entails. But otherwise,
quality was really starting to step up around that time.
Yeah, but not necessarily for television anime. And Noir was a TV series, and
oh, I know.
Yeah, they do. I mean, when they need to, the animation does step up to the game. Other times, they are kind of phoning it in here and there. But I mean, that's mostly because budget.
Yeah, budget's a killer.
Yeah. But, that's pretty much everything. We got anything else we want to add before we move on?
Yeah, I'm glad Chris mentioned sort of investments in Animal Crossing, because one of the things I did with my overtime paycheck was sort of teabagged the completely and utterly demolished oil industry by actually getting in on stocks I could afford. So
and then it cratered.
No, it cratered and then I got in.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. If it hadn't cratered, I wouldn't have been able to afford to get in. So because oil fell to the point where it was actually in negative pricing the other day. Yep.
Got up to negative 40.
Yeah, I now have an oil industry portfolio that, once the pandemic passes, is going to become an industry of necessity again.
Yay.
And yeah.
All right, how that goes. Yeah. You mind sharing some of that, Mr. Millionaire?
I can pass the word along and get you started.
Awesome. Send me an email. All right. So, moving on from there, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, it's been a while since we've talked about something gaming-related on this segment, so I thought it would be good to go back in time to the early 90s and the release of the Sega Genesis. So, when the Sega Genesis originally released back in, 89, yes, it was kind of being, it was some major fucking competition for Nintendo. Had the Super Nintendo released yet?
No, not till 91.
Yeah, so for a couple years in the graphics department, Sega was kind of kicking Nintendo's ass.
NEC and SNK.
Yep. But basically what happened is the Genesis came out, and all of these Japanese developers suddenly had this new console they could work with, which had much more advanced graphic capabilities than the Famicom did. So suddenly all of these developers including Sega themselves, were bringing in the idea of maybe adapting some of their arcade cabinets or making new versions of their arcade games and releasing them for this new new console. One of these that they decided to bring was a sequel to a game that they had back out in the arcades called Shinobi. And for those of you who don't know what Shinobi was, if you never played it, Shinobi was, it was kind of like Ninja Gaiden.
Straightforward action platformer?
Yeah, fairly straightforward action platformer. It was kind of like Ninja Gaiden, although unlike Ninja Gaiden, it also had these occasional sections where it went into a, I don't want to say
this. The Ninja Star minigame?
Yeah, which, I gotta be honest, back then when I played it, I thought that was pretty awesome.
It was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was also annoying as all hell because it was damn near impossible to play. Norio Shioba was assigned as the director for what was going to be the sequel to Shinobi. In Japan, it was called the Super Shinobi, Zazupa Shinobi. And in the United States and elsewhere, it was known as The Revenge of Shinobi. Now, being that it was basically a first-generation Genesis game, you can be kind of forgiving in the fact that, you know, since this is the first time, some of these games probably aren't as up to snuff as some of the later Genesis games was. A lot of the early Genesis games were basically designed to be like, sort of like, showcase for the type of capabilities that the Sega Genesis could produce if used to its fullest capacity. And that also meant that because of that, sometimes these games weren't necessarily, I don't want to say rushed, but let's just say that, you know, Sega kind of wanted to get as many products out as possible to showcase the capabilities of their new console. So some shortcuts were taken, shall we say. And The Revenge of Shinobi is absolutely an example of that. So
Which is weird, because that game also really holds up.
Yeah. It's actually a really solid action platformer. But let me explain. According to Norio Shioba himself, he was the director and, you know, he helped, you know, and the thing is, even though he was the director, he's not really much of an artist. So, I mean, he had a hand in sort of all parts of the game's design, but mostly as a supervisor more than anything else. So when he was trying to, like, say, create some ideas for, like, what enemies they should have or what boss characters they would have, he would sort of make these rough sketches on like a notepad, and he did these all sort of from memory. And then he would like give them off to the developers. He's like, he had thought, you know, maybe the art designers would then use their own creativity and sort of flesh out the idea for these characters. They did not do that. And because of that, we got some bosses and enemies that were awfully fucking familiar. Like Batman. And
Spider-Man was in there. Godzilla was in there. The Terminator was in there.
It gets better. Right here. Okay. I'm on load, damn it. Yeah. On top of that, you also got enemies that were basically Rambo, you know? And you also got some you also got Godzilla, the Incredible Hulk, and yes, the Terminator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I seem to remember the depiction of Spider-Man was actually so good that the same studio went on to make a Spider-Man game.
I think they did.
Yeah.
So yeah,
in it's subsequent versions of the Revenge of Shinobi, Spider-Man was actually licensed.
Yeah. Unless they didn't do that, in which case, when they brought it back, they decided to pink him up.
Yeah. So that's why there are 6 revisions of Revenge of Shinobi.
Yeah. And the Batman clone basically became Devilman.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude that looked like Rambo now kind of looks like Duke Nukem.
Yeah.
And the Godzilla clone turned into a giant skeletal dinosaur with internal organs completely fucking exposed.
Because Japan.
As you do.
Yeah. But like it says here on Crack, Sega got the license, and Marvel had no problems with them turning their beloved web-slinger into evil fodder for a ninja hero, possibly because Sega had the loved ones of Marvel CEO tied up in a Kyoto basement. Yeah, when the game was released in 2009, they basically pinked up Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, though, the Terminator and the Hulk have never been changed.
Nope.
And you see, this is sort of a fun part of Japanese gaming history. And the reason is because this type of shit wasn't unusual. This shit was everywhere in Japanese gaming in the 80s.
Well, and there was no patching either. So once it was once something like this got out in the wild, the die was cast.
Like basically all of your favorite old school video games were basically created as dead cribs of other franchises. Like, there's a reason why, like, all of the original characters from Street Fighter 2 are based on something else.
If you have 30th Anniversary Collection, you can actually look at the design documents.
Yeah. And you'll see where they got the inspiration from. Oh, yeah, because, like, a bunch of those characters from Street Fighter, they legit, like, got inspiration from, let's just say there were a lot of fans at Capcom who were fans of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Because there's a lot of characters that got inspired from JoJo. Guile's design is from the second story arc of JoJo. M. Bison is partly
something else.
He's from Rikkyo, the story of Ricky. Of course, Rose is Lisa. Like, literally, it's not even subtle. Look at a picture of, you know, Hirohiko Araki's artwork of Lisa for that part of JoJo, and then put it next to Rose. It's almost the exact same fucking character. And then, of course, there's, you know, other games that were, like, you know, just straight up, like, throw random shit in there for just no reason. But that's kind of what was fun about late 80s, early 90s Japanese gaming. It was basically the wild fucking west. And there were basically no fucking rules.
Yeah.
And
unless somebody complained. Well, and then
there
they
were
had to do
rules, but they were all subject to the concept of it's easier to get forgiveness than permission.
Yeah.
And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
All right.
Woo! Yeah. So, Now then, it is now time to start the show proper, and as always, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And who's our first asshole of the week? We've already talked about him. It's Governor of my home state of Georgia, Brian Kemp, who has decided to reopen the state to business, even though freaking Donald goddamn Trump himself said that he shouldn't do it.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot of the businesses he's earmarked for getting opened earlier are not really essential in any way.
Yeah.
Stuff like gyms, tattoo shops, hair salons, nail salons, massage parlors, a lot of stuff like that. I think bowling alleys too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, a few of these require direct contact between people.
Not a great idea.
Nope.
Yeah, you could maybe space out equipment in gyms to try to get people away from each other, but that's not really the way those businesses are set up.
Yeah.
You're supposed to pack them in, especially when you got people sweating and all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically, you know, this guy a few weeks ago said he didn't know that you could transmit the virus to anybody else if you weren't exhibiting symptoms.
Yeah, which, again, he was lying. He knew that.
Yeah. But now he's saying, it's okay now.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. He was already – I'm pretty sure that – because I have to remind people, Brian Kemp basically resisted for quite a few weeks to actually create – to actually put out a shelter-in-place order until both, you know, Atlanta and Albany basically exploded in COVID-19 deaths. So he finally had to actually do something. And him talking about, you know, we didn't know about all this was basically him trying to cover his ass.
Yeah, because there has to be a liability discussion eventually.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's going to be another fucking huge liability discussion once this happens and the fucking cases spike again.
Yeah.
This and is he's like, going to have nobody to fucking blame but himself this time.
Yeah, we'll be generally seen out of the protesting.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that, by the way.
Yeah, I think Kentucky, their biggest spike was right after protests.
Yep. I think there was like a grand total of like 19 people from those rallies that ended up reporting. Yep.
I will do my utmost to hide my surprise.
Yeah. Yep, stupid game, stupid prizes. But yeah, but obviously, Brian Kemp isn't the only dumbass this week. We got a few others. For example, yeah, this was, I think this is one of the defining moments of this week. So the mayor of Las Vegas went on to do an interview with Anderson Cooper on CNN. And Anderson Cooper actually showed emotion, which is...
And his face palm was all of us.
Yeah, it wasn't just a face palm. It was a double face palm.
Yeah.
And it was like...
I don't want to be on this planet anymore.
Yeah, he's like, this woman cannot possibly be this fucking stupid.
Yeah.
For the record, the only reason she became mayor of Las Vegas is because she has the same last name as her ex, as her, I guess, late husband, who also was once mayor of Las Vegas.
Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the name recognition, that's all.
Yep, and, Vegas is a city well known for, you know, just packing in people. Mm-hmm. The casinos and all that.
That's its identity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the mayor she was on, let's see, I'm trying to grab some quotes from here. She said, I love everything open because we've had viruses for years that have been here. Which doesn't mean anything compared to this virus, which is completely different from everything else we've had in recent memory.
Yep.
Especially in fatality rates.
We have cures for those other viruses. We don't have anything for this one yet.
Yeah. Let's see. She also said she criticized Cooper for showing a graphic from Chinese researchers that showed how easily the coronavirus can be spread in public. She responded, this isn't China. This is Las Vegas, Nevada. To which Cooper had to retort, "Wow, okay, that's really ignorant."
Yeah.
Because it's not like it's any different.
It feels like she was almost about to go into a hype, a rant about negative hype.
Yeah.
Yeah, she said, let's see, the mayor's statements are outrageous considering essential frontline workers have been dealing with the consequences of this crisis firsthand. As far as casino employees that balked at the idea of returning to work. She said, let's see. Or no, that's from Gioconda Arguello Klein, Secretary Treasurer of the Culinary Workers Union.
Mm-hmm.
Health and safety is our priority. Workers and guests have to be safe. And yeah, casinos are not really well made to spread people out.
No.
And especially for a city that thrives on tourism,
mm-hmm.
when that's not really a thing that's going on much at this point right now.
Yep.
Which is kind of the big issue with opening up, because like, who do you expect to come in? Maybe some locals, but not the numbers that justify opening it, really. Let's see. I believe she also talked about offering up her city as a control group for some sort of social study on social distancing.
It's like, some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice I am willing to make.
Yeah, it's like that's very much not a good thing to say, because they say, and I'm willing for all the people in my city to die if it gets us some money. And she was not the first person to say that this week, which is a hell of a thing. But
in a way, there's something to be said for the fact that she actually just came out and said it.
Yeah, which is like, this is the thing you're not supposed to say out loud.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, thanks for letting people know. And I assume the next time she's up for re-election, they got some good sound bites for this. Because I believe she basically got her job because her husband used to be the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And she would be around whenever he was doing his work, so she basically got his goodwill, good vibes off of him.
Mm-hmm.
Even though apparently she's not exactly the best person to be running the city in this kind of crisis.
And she's about to find out that those good vibes run out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, next up, our next douchebag of the week is this asshole, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick from Texas, who basically, a part of me wants to think that he didn't actually mean for it to come out this way, but Dan Patrick is apparently a massive asshole, so he was probably completely serious when he said that, you know, all deaths are a tragedy, but there are more important things than living when referring to reopening the states to their economy.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to remind everybody, our economy is not destroyed or broken. Okay?
No.
It's on pause.
It's just not working for us.
Yeah. It's on pause right now.
And it wasn't doing that before it got paused.
And people like Dan Patrick who keep telling you that, you know, we've got to get back to work because we're fucked. Yeah, they're trying to sell you something. And the price is your life.
Yeah.
Don't fucking let them fool you.
Yeah, the Texas Democratic Party basically responded to this by saying they would see our family members die to bail out Wall Street. The lives of our families, our friends, and our communities have no dollar amount. Texas Republicans can no longer claim to be the pro-life party anymore. They should be running this statement in any ad against Republicans.
Yeah.
Showing this is what the party actually believes. He said the quiet part out loud. Because they're not actually pro-life. They're pro-capitalism, whatever you can produce for them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is really short-sighted because if everybody's dead, nobody can spend money.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Just... I don't know. I'm no economic expert, but it seems to me
pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The invisible hand of the market desires sacrifice, and only the blood of the workers can sate its hunger.
And I'm sure you've seen that Trump now calls coronavirus the invisible enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure is not an all-purpose term for other things that could be deemed racist.
Yeah. Speaking of bullshit, Trump actually went on television during one of the most recent briefings. And
it was yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. And he basically brought up the suggestion that people should start injecting disinfectant into themselves or use UV light or heat to kill COVID-19. Now, he's now claiming that he was saying it sarcastically. We saw the fucking video.
No.
No. Fuck you. This, we have too many people are dead for you to be joking about this shit. That's not how this works.
Yep.
Let's see if I, see if I can find the quotes here. Let's see. So, supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. Mm-hmm. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside of the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way, and I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting. Which, that would kill you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is, it's kind of, it's not really exactly what they do with chemotherapy, that kind of thing. But it's similar ideas, and it's like a very last resort thing because nothing else has worked.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this would basically just kill you if you're going to the point of trying to kill a virus that could be in all parts of your body.
Mm-hmm.
He also asked if there's a way to use disinfectants on the body, quote, by injection inside or almost a cleaning.
Yeah. Also, you may have noticed, but Trump and Fox News have pretty much completely shut up about hydroxychloroquine.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a reason for that. It's because I think it was the FDA, not the FDA, CDC, or maybe it was the World Health Organization, or maybe it was concert with all three. They actually decided to do a study with that, and they found out that pretty much the most common result is death.
Yeah, we got that later on here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at the point where you're basically having the president suggest maybe trying bleach, just gargling bleach is like him, it's first. Not a good point where you're at.
Yeah.
I'm trying
but
to
I sure sarcastic. Know that that basically made all those assholes at the Church of Bleach really happy.
Yeah, even the companies that make disinfectants and bleach on are like, yeah, don't do that. No.
Yeah, no.
It's not what this is for. And I think the information he's referencing for this stuff is about particles.
Yeah.
On surfaces. Like how quickly you can kill them with disinfectants or with, you know, heat or lights, you know, when they're outside on, you know, surfaces and whatnot. It's like, that's not, you can't do the same thing to the human body because it's not a surface like that. It's not an inanimate object that you're affecting there. It's actual living tissue.
Yeah. There is no other way to say it. He is straight up going to get people killed.
He's already
this shit. Yeah, there are already people that are dead because of this shit.
They got fish tank cleaner.
Yep.
They had either the ingredient in it or some similar sounding ingredient that it's fish tank cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that's a cleaner is really made for you to be ingesting.
Yeah. He said, try it. What if you got to lose your life, apparently?
Looking at it fairly, these clearly aren't our best and brightest that we're losing here.
Granted, I will give you that.
But still, it's off of his. He's not a doctor. He's not.
Oh, yeah, he owns anything. It.
Oh, yeah.
He's, you know, it's like when they had Dr. Phil on Fox News, and like, he's not a doctor. He's not even a psychologist anymore.
Yeah, he got disbarred.
He doesn't have a license in any state, so he's not even that. And it's like, we need to have people on TV that call themselves doctors need to be an actual physician that can work a few days a week.
Yeah.
Because if they're not, then they should not be called doctor.
Yeah.
You don't call people judge anymore if they're not an acting judge anywhere.
Yeah. And last for assholes of the week. So a bunch of the small businesses, thanks to the recent stimulus package, we're going to get a bunch of money for, you know, for a loan fund. But it turned out that much of that money actually went to big corporations. Yep. Now, at least two of these companies have given the money back after people basically shamed the ever-loving crap out of them. But yeah. The rest of them don't have those kinds of scruples.
Yeah, Shake Shack essentially said they
gave part of the money back.
They gave their $10 million fund. They essentially said they got funding elsewhere.
Yep.
So they did not need that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think the other one is Ruth's Chris Steakhouse,
mm-hmm.
Which all week was getting raked over the coals for being a company that made about $500 million a year. Mm-hmm. Was taking money from this fund, which is legit. And I think they just decided to return that today.
Yeah.
I think I got an email from the ACLU about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had to literally do a petition with a shit ton of signatures on it to get them to consider that. But the people here at CNBC asked, let's see, I'm trying to see how many companies they asked. Here it was like a bunch of the ones that are at the top of the stock markets. And basically most of them either didn't answer or said, we're not returning the money.
Yep.
Which, it was great.
Part of me thinks this was by design.
Oh, yeah.
All of me thinks it.
Yeah.
I think there was supposed to be oversight on this stuff, and Trump pulled that out the last minute.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't pull it out. He just installed his own dude.
And then sprayed it all over our backs.
Yeah. And there's some actual small companies that make a decent amount of money, but not enough to really sustain them. Like the... Talk about a company here that's, let's see, Digimark, mm-hmm. Which makes invisible digital identifiers for driver's licenses to banknotes. They make about $23 million in annual revenue, but only have 215 workers, so it's not that big, but it's just the sort of business they're in. But yeah. They reached out to the 41 biggest publicly traded companies that had received PPP loans to see if they would be returning the funds. In light of the Treasury Department's new guidelines, 6 said they had no plans to return the funds, 5 said they will or had returned the money, mm-hmm. while 30 either did not respond or said their decision was pending.
That just means they're not going to do it, but they're going to wait until it's a little more under the radar to announce it if they even bother.
Yeah. And it's like the top, the 41 biggest companies to do this probably don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, if you're a national or even like a regional chain, you're probably big enough you can survive this just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of small business getting denied because there's no funds for them anymore. Especially because I think it's being handled by some of the big banks who get to decide this stuff. And guess what? They're not going to give it to the small companies.
Mm-hmm.
If you wonder how we get to like a... dystopian future where it's all big corporations. That's how you do it.
Yep.
Run all the small companies out of business. You have all these empty buildings in your cities, and they're going to get bought up by the big companies.
Mm-hmm.
Consolidate their markets.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, but it wasn't all bad because we actually have some heroes of the week. And our heroes of the week are all of those healthcare workers who actually took time out of their day to come out and counter-protest the protesters that were protesting the quarantine.
Yeah.
And none of these people actually did anything like eye-catching. They just stood in front of them and blocked them.
Well, there were the two guys that were hanging out outside the in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Who were in their full garb, just standing in front of these vehicles.
Yep.
Basically not
moving.
They
didn't say nothing. They didn't do nothing. They just stood there, rigid as a tree. And
you've probably seen the picture of the woman who is hanging out of her SUV.
Mm-hmm.
She's on the passenger side with a big like baseball uniform that says USA on it, just yelling at this dude in front of them.
Yeah, she's holding that sign that says it's supposed to say "Land of the Free," but "of the" is written too small, so it just looks like "Land Free."
Yeah,
and she's basically screaming, "Go to China if you want communism." It's like,
what about any of this is communism?
Yeah. And honestly, that was the best thing. The best thing those dudes could do was just stand there and do nothing. Because they didn't have to do anything. These people basically hung themselves with their own rope.
Yeah. I like to call it freedom.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the other pictures that have come out, like that woman screaming in front of a Baskin Robbins. Yeah. The dude showing up with Gadsden flags and Confederate flags, and there's even been a swastika or two spotted.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to pay any attention to a protest when there are U.S. flags, Confederate flags, and the Don't Tread on Me flags. You know, those people have no sense of anything realistic that's going on, because they're advertising two different concepts with those flags.
Also, it came out that none of these protests were fucking grassroots. They were all astroturfed.
Yeah, a lot of the sites were run by the same company.
Yeah. It was partly Koch money, Koch brother money, and it was also, fuck, what's that dude's name? I can't remember it, but he's like a, he's one of the big conservative funders. Yeah, so you can safely ignore these people. It's basically almost like the early days of what the Tea Party looked like, except somehow even stupider.
Yeah, there's some nice quotes in this article. Let's see. Eric and Kristen Brune of Winchester, Virginia are among the medical professionals who've done counter-protesting. Said, my wife and I told countless people that we want the economy to open too, but we think it's unsafe, and I think if we do it too soon, it's going to be even worse.
Yeah.
The other thing that we wanted to do was sort of convey to people that the enemy is, at least in our state, not Governor Ralph Northam. It's the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Brune, who was a major in the Air Force and served for 11 years, much of it as a doctor, said, more than a few people sort of said, you're fake news.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I got accused probably a dozen times of not really being medical professionals.
Yeah, that I saw a lot of that on Facebook, too. Like, yeah, people like, claiming like these people were like actors or whatever.
It's like, let them beat the shit out of you and then fucking take you into the, you know, the intensive care units to take care of you and see how you think about what they are, what they're capable of doing.
Yeah.
And
by the way, I am absolutely convinced that some of those people you saw screaming in those photographs are probably going to end up in the hospital with COVID-19 probably in the next couple weeks.
We can only hope.
Yeah, we're going to see how the numbers go for these different cities and states that these are happening in.
Yeah, because we already saw some of the results already. So.
Yeah. I think the only ones I've seen any sort of protesting that's been good is the – I think it was in California. They put sand in the skate parks to discourage people from skating, and so then dirt bikers came in. Said, hey, thank you. It's like, that's good protesting right there. Mm. Saying, we're not the problem here.
But,
if they're safe, they're wearing, you know, masks and all that to protect themselves anyway.
And also, we got another hero of the week, and that's the FDA. This week, the FDA approved the first at-home COVID-19 test that could be getting via doctor's orders. Now, that's been, like, one of the biggest problems we've had in this country is that there's just not been any widespread testing. And
still won't be there just yet?
No.
It's just starting, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah, it allows patients to collect their own samples using Pixel by LabCorp COVID-19 test home kits that's they would then mail to a lab for testing. And so who knows, like, what the turnaround is on that. But that's probably better than certain areas you might be in.
Yep.
Or just going in and getting tested. Cause I want to say still we are not all that great on testing at this point. I think they were saying – I remember reading something that was for Georgia, like, you need to be at a certain point of testing, and they were nowhere close to start opening up.
Yep.
I think your testing needs to be at...
Keep in mind, Georgia is where the CDC is located.
Yeah, where you're basically getting, like, positive rate of 10%, I think.
Yeah.
And Georgia's at 23%.
Uh-huh.
It's like, yeah, you're not testing enough. You're basically getting as many cases as you can as you're testing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've gotten almost 4.7 million tests confirmed, or tests conducted in U.S., which is just over 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not enough.
Yeah.
Especially when you got 890,000 confirmed cases.
Mm-hmm.
That's just about 20%.
All right. And, all right, so with that out of the way, it is now time to start the proper show proper. Get ready, folks. We got another load coming from the COVID-19 dump truck. All right, here we go. First things first. There are now nearly 2.8 million cases worldwide. About 195,000 people worldwide have died of it. And about 51,000 of those deaths, about a quarter of it, is right here in the United States.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not good numbers at all.
Nope.
Yeah, we got some people talking about heat, summertime, all that. Guess what the Southern Hemisphere is about to do?
Mm-hmm.
They're about to go into winter, their fall time.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you're going to see cases in South America and Africa and Australia start picking up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck me. The fucking racism against black and brown people is going to go through the goddamn roof because of that shit.
Yeah.
I think we'll point to Australia and be like, how's white people doing over here?
Yeah, but see, over in Australia, the black people also happen to be the indigenous natives.
Yeah.
So they get doubly screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at this chart, like, their main spots are basically around their big cities.
Yep.
Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Adelaide, and Perth.
Yeah.
Luckily for them, like, there's a lot of desert there. It's a lot of spaced out.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like Canada, where most of the population's huddled around the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller parts of the country than what all is there.
Yeah. Furthermore, we have identified what we believe is the first victim in the United States of the COVID-19 virus, but it actually happened weeks earlier in San Jose, which means this thing actually got on our shores a lot earlier than we thought it did.
Yeah, she died on February 6th.
Yeah.
Which the first fatality out of Seattle was the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the 6th, another one on the 17th, and the third was on March 6th. So at least two people ahead of when the deaths in Seattle happened. Which means, hey, we were fucked before we knew it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's been around since January over here.
It's probably has.
I mean, we weren't talking about it back then, but I think, you know, when CES happened, I think that's when it was just starting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too surprised if that's a good place where it did start over here.
Yeah.
Well, think back to late January, early February, that bug that I had that kept me off the podcast for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of wondering now.
Yeah. Once the antibody tests show up, it might be worth getting one and doing it.
Looking into.
It, because it really felt like my lungs were full of bubble wrap.
Eh. I always thought you'd probably have a hand in the apocalypse at some point.
I'm honored.
Well, anyway. So this week, the House passed another relief package. It is a $484 billion relief package for small businesses and hospitals.
Yeah, it seems like this has just gotten signed by Trump today, so...
Yeah.
I'm not too sure about the details just offhand, because it's kind of happened behind the scenes, mostly. This wasn't as public as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it'll replenish a depleted loan package for small businesses, hopefully with better oversight to who gets it, as well as provide funds for hospitals and coronavirus testing and treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of getting money to the more important parts of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $349 billion is allocated for the small business loan package. And $75 billion for hospitals, $25 billion for national coronavirus testing.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a lot of this could be helped if we just, you know, nationalize the hospitals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we get UBI going here.
Yeah.
Because $1,200 for most people is not going to last 10 weeks.
No.
Mm-mm.
I got mine today and spent about 20% of it.
Mm-hmm.
In one thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we could also maybe start having a single-payer health care since, you know, the government's paying a lot of these insurance bills.
Yeah, but where are we going to get the money for this?
Yeah,
how are we
going to
pay for it?
Yeah. Yeah, this whole pandemic, if anything, has shown that that argument is complete bullshit.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it was already obviously bullshit, but now people realize how bullshit it really was. Anyway.
Well, except for the ones that are really drinking the Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They are absolutely just pounding it, aren't they? Yeah. And I have, I've encountered some of those people on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it just, we're going to need like a national campaign of like cult deprogramming after the next election. Because once the dude's out of office, there is going to be a lot of people who, they're just not going to know what the fuck to do with themselves. Like, there is a part of me that thinks that once he's out of office, like, whatever like narcotic sort of effect that he has on people might start fading away.
Oh, it's good to think about, but I doubt it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Trump's decided that the United States Postal Service should raise prices to get bailout funds. By the way, United States Postal Service has never been a money loser. It has always returned on its investment several times fold every year.
Yeah, there's a certain party that doesn't like that.
Yeah, because it shows that, you know, you can actually have a nationalized industry that actually works well.
Yeah, so Ike's basically suggested, let's see, the post office, if they raise the price of a package by approximately 4 times, it would be a whole new ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's talking about as far as delivering packages for Amazon and other retailers.
Mm-hmm.
Still doesn't make sense, but they don't want to raise it because they don't want to insult Amazon. He has a hard-on for Amazon.
Yeah, because Jeff Bezos and
yeah,
basically kind of called him out on his shit, and now he's like, you know, and he that motherfucker nurses a grudge, like he really does.
I believe there's somebody that insulted him like back in the 80s.
Yeah,
about his hands, and he would every once in a while send pictures that he cut out of the magazine or whatever and circled the hands mm-hmm. and were like not tiny
yeah.
or something like that, you know.
And then you remember Rosie O'Donnell did like that one impression of him on, I think it was The View, and he would not shut up about it for the next year and a half.
Yeah. But yeah, the quote here, but they don't want to raise it because they don't want to insult Amazon. They don't want it to insult other companies, perhaps, that they like. Post office should raise the price of the packages to the companies, not to the people, to the companies. If they did that, it would be a whole different story. And apparently Mnuchin agrees with him,
mm-hmm.
adding that there will be certain criteria for a postal reform program as part of a loan agreement. But Trump said he would go a step further. If they don't want to raise the price, I'm not signing anything, so they'll raise the price so they become more profitable, but so they lose much less money. If they don't do it, I'm not signing anything. I'm not authorizing you to do anything, Steve.
Yeah.
Which, It seems like a power grab for the USPS. Try to take over that and force it to their specific will to get back at like Amazon and these other companies, which is a crazy thing to do.
Which is kind of strange, because I don't know if you've ordered stuff from Amazon lately, but
I just got some.
Yeah, oftentimes I got some today that I ordered. Isn't even involved in the transaction.
Yeah. Nope. I got a package from Amazon today that came in like recycled bubbler packaging that I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I assume because they needed something cheaper for all this stuff they were sending out.
Yeah.
I ordered it, I think, first week of April. Just came today.
Yeah.
And the thing I ordered today, they're saying the 6th to the 9th, which isn't too bad. It's 2 weeks. Not like 3 or 4 weeks this package was, which had some medicine in it I could have used earlier, but whatever. Also had SATA cables in it.
Oh.
So I could put my other SSD from my old PC in. That's the last thing I'm taking out of it. Yeah, I don't have any extras of that stuff. So I was like, okay, well, I need to put more storage so I can make use of that other hard drive. And then for whatever in the future. It was like $6 for a few of them. Like, all right, that's fine. I got regular ones and the ones that have the 90-degree corner on them.
Yeah, candy day.
So, yeah, because I guess what I'm going to do with the SSD.
Yeah. All right, next up. White House advisor Stephen Moore compares right-wing protesters to Rosa Parks. Oh, by the way, you know who else was heavy involved in organizing all this shit? Stephen Moore.
Yeah, you know what? You know Rosa Parks, you know, went on the bus every day, packing some heat. That's how she got shit done. She sat on the bus and got constant threats every day for a good year or so, whatever that whole thing was. I think it was like 380 days, something like that. It's like she scared the shit out of white people without guns. And you see all these people, you know, packed with assault rifles and shit, which you can't take that as anything but a threat. You know, like something that maybe the Second Amendment should be used against them. Because they're essentially trying to say they'll kill people to get what they want.
By the way,
also,
going
Stephen
back...
Moore is an idiot.
Oh, yeah, he's
I think Trump. I think Trump literally picked him for his whatever position he has as because he or Jared Kushner found his book on Amazon. It was about how China's ruining the world or the economy or whatever. That he wrote that, so it's like a really shitty book.
Anyway, next story, going back to something I mentioned earlier, there was a study done to see if hydroxychloroquine actually did have some beneficial effects on dealing with COVID-19. It has effects, just not ones that you want. It mostly results in death and no benefits to the subject taking it. And because of that, both Trump and Fox News have completely shut their damn traps about it.
Let's see. The study was done in a number of U.S. Veterans hospitals. 368 patients. So it's the largest study that's been done so far. Not like that fucking asshole in Texas that decided to just start using his subjects, his clients' test subjects.
Yeah.
Unprovoked, without getting permission from all of them.
Which is not only very unethical, but also super fucking illegal.
Yeah, he should be getting his license pulled.
And getting his ass thrown in jail, I hope.
Yeah. But yeah, so 368 male veterans hospitalized with confirmed coronavirus infections at Veterans Health Administration medical centers. Let's see, about 20% who were given hydroxychloroquine plus usual care died versus 11% of those getting routine care. About 22% of those getting the drug plus azithromycin died too. But the difference between that group and the usual care was not considered large enough to rule out other factors that could have affected survival. So it seemed to make really no difference in the need for a breathing machine either. They did not track side effects, but noted a hint that hydroxychloroquine might have damaged other organs. So yeah, the thing people don't talk about with this drug is that it can cause heart issues and blindness. The people that are on it for lupus or whatever have to get constantly tested to make mm-hmm. sure nothing bad's going on.
Yeah.
Which is not really what you want out of a potential cure for coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have to constantly check them every few months to make sure that it's not making them go blind.
Yeah.
Didn't Trump, like, stockpile a whole bunch of this stuff?
Yeah.
So did my home state.
Yeah.
Good job.
And now for some news that's actually kind of funny. Oil prices in the U.S. actually crashed into the negative digits this week for the first time. It got down to negative 40.
Yeah, I think the one I saw was like 37.63. Basically, they were going to give you $37 to store a barrel of oil.
Yeah.
Because, let's see, the physical reality of oil is that it is difficult to handle, volatile, potentially polluting, and actually useless without a refinery.
Yeah.
If you had a stinking barrel of oil in your backyard, would you pay someone $100 per barrel to take it away? Yes, mm-hmm. And you would probably be relieved that you're not charged $300. Saying that next month it could crash to negative $100, which has never been below zero, I believe, at this point in the history of this country. And it went down basically a straight line for one day.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a good article. It's like, oh, this is down to like $10. Oh, it's down to like $4. Oh, it's below zero. Oh no, it's at negative 30. It's like, okay, you guys
that escalated
had to,
quickly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it fucking cratered. It was, yeah, like Patrick, I almost got wood from it.
Yeah.
It was glorious. Yeah.
Which is because so. These are four contracts for May for oil production. And basically people had reached all that they think they need. And so nobody wanted it anymore, you know, which is not good for the oil economy.
Mm-hmm.
Great for everybody else. It's like, hey, we don't need this shit polluting. So I think June orders are expected to not be great either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is good for all those great deals that Trump made recently regarding oil.
Mm.
So I believe a bunch of oil rigs have been shut down for the time being because they've got nowhere to put the oil. Nobody wants it for the next few months at least. And yeah, nobody's really driving too much, at least normal places. I saw tons of cars today. Probably because it was actually nice out for the first time in a few weeks.
Hmm.
Which is still not a good reason to go out driving, unless you got specific reasons for it.
Yep.
But yeah, it seems there's that deal with OPEC and Russia, basically agreeing to slash production by 10 million barrels beginning in May.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. had to similarly cut output. I assume Canada's the same.
Yeah.
So... it's not looking good for oil in the near future.
No. Part of now, obviously, there is part of the idea that this might lead to an energy crisis or a gas shortage.
Once we get everything back on track,
yeah,
it's going to be a bit of a delay getting everything back up and running to meet the demand.
Yeah.
That'll be next year probably at some point.
Yeah.
And stocks are going to go up, up, up.
Mm. Yep.
And after that happens, well,
but yeah, they
bunch
do
of hookers and cocaine.
Yeah, basically.
They do suppose here that we could have a lot of bankruptcies here in the short term.
Oh yeah,
because these companies have a lot of stock and nobody that wants it.
Yeah.
No.
But to be honest, I fucking hope they go bankrupt. They fucking deserve it.
Which is kind of crazy, the number here. We have, say, in a $20 oil environment, 533 U.S. oil exploration and production companies will file for bankruptcy by the end of 2021,
mm-hmm.
according to this report. even in a $30 environment, more than 200 could go bankrupt. Which is like, that's a shitload of companies for something you thought would be wrapped up by, you know, a few big ones.
Yeah. But as that dude, you know, who was on, I think it was Fox Business, basically said, all this basically means is that a bunch of billionaires don't get a vacation in the Hamptons for the summer.
Yeah.
That's really the effect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. All right. Speaking of shit that is very quickly rushing us headlong into the American version of the French Revolution, another 4.4 million people applied for unemployment, making it 26.5 million people have applied for unemployment claims since March 14th.
Yeah, which is, I want to say people have been saying that's basically wiped out all of the jobs that have been created since the last recession.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, good job, Trump. You wiped out another accomplishment of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You just managed to do it in 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Also saw that basically this amount is, let's see, where is it at? It's 20 times the pre-coronavirus levels of claims. And more than five times of the worst five-week stretch during the 2007 to 2009 financial crisis, which is a hell of a way to put that in perspective.
Yeah,
we're about 16.2% of the U.S. labor force is laid off, which is going to keep climbing.
Yeah, one thing that is, should be pointed out is that a lot of this unemployment is temporary.
Yeah,
there are a lot of, you know, employees who are looking for something that they can do now, but they still have jobs secured once, you know, stuff starts getting back to normal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and also these claims doesn't mean they actually get any relief.
Right.
These are just people saying, you know, we're out of work for this amount of time. We need some help for this. Yeah, I think my dad was trying to apply for this for my mom because she was off for a week due to this, and he apparently couldn't figure out the site how to apply for the specific thing they needed because they make this shit complicated.
A government website that's not easy to use. Imagine that.
No.
What a shock.
That probably frames things in a way you're like, well, it's not quite that, but you know, you don't want to potentially file a false claim or whatever.
Yeah,
get accused of that shit, and it's like, this is stupid.
Don't misunderstand. That shit's on purpose.
Yeah.
They're intended, you know, because remember, it's a Republican administration, and it's mostly Republicans or people allied with the GOP who are designing these websites, and they are specifically trying.
Look at how good
trying,
Rudy Giuliani is at his tech.
Yeah, they are specifically trying to make it as asinine and stupid as possible. To try and discredit the idea of a welfare state being effective.
At least the silver lining is they're failing at a historic rate.
Yeah.
26.5 million people managed to get through their nets.
Yep. By the way, just because I want to briefly bring it up, and this is like a common thing we have here in the U.S. I don't know if there's a similar thing up in Canada. So whenever you bring up the idea of, like, having the government do a certain service like healthcare or, creating programs that are like, you know, like maternal care and stuff like that, that, you know, requires companies to provide it or it just provides it outright. You'll always say, you know, hey, somebody will always say this shit, and it always drives me fucking crazy. They'll say, well, if you think the government's so good at doing stuff, you should go to the DMV. Just a quick question. Has anybody here ever really had, like, a seriously bad experience at the DMV?
Not really.
Because I've been to the DMV a couple of times in my life, and it's never been anything worse than just a mild inconvenience.
For as much as you hear it in, like, sitcoms...
Yeah.
It's being like a thing that's terrible. It's like Mine, like, maybe the worst is I had to wait a little bit.
Yeah, like, the last time I had to go to the DMV is I had to get, you know, a new driver's license.
Yeah.
And you know what I had to do? I had to sit for maybe 15 minutes, and then I went up, and I filled out a form, and had my picture taken, and I was out. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why, you know, it's a trope that, honestly, I don't think it applies anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, the worst experience I ever had was just getting my license, which was more because of circumstances
around
my parents. Because
the worst for me was when I was getting my learner's permit, but that was mostly because they were understaffed that day.
Yeah,
that I decided to go do it.
Now that would fucking suck.
Yeah.
For me, it was
but
just
guess what? That was back when I was a teenager. I'm in my 30s now, and I've never had another experience in the DMV like that since.
Yeah.
So
it's just like the learner's permit expired before I actually went to take the real test, and we had to get the papers done again.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And then somehow we lost the paper on the way to getting the actual driving school.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go do it a third time. It's like, that's not really their fault. Mm-hmm. It's user error. Somehow losing one of three pieces of paper that you get.
Yeah. So next up from there, Neiman Marcus is going to be the very first major U.S. retailer that is going to be filing for bankruptcy because of the current mess with COVID-19.
Yeah, they think it's going to happen on Sunday, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
and I want to sort of point out what this actually means, because have we talked about what type of bankruptcy they're going for?
I'm trying to see if they mention
it. Is it Chapter 11 or...
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's just about restructuring their debt.
Yeah. So, you know, that's just what's going to happen.
That's... Yeah, because they have they shut down all 43 of their Neiman Marcus locations,
mm-hmm.
two dozen Last Call stores, and two Bergdorf Goodman stores in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they have $4.8 billion in debt. According to their credit ratings, some of the debt is legacy of its $6 billion leveraged buyout in 2013 mm-hmm. by its owners, a private equity firm from Canada,
mm-hmm.
Ares Management Corp. and Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. So Canada plays a role in this.
Yeah.
Some form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not a great time to be a department store. Hasn't been for a while.
Nope. Mm-mm.
So it seems like these guys are just kind of on the edge, and this just pushed them over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Next up, Virgin Australia is going into administration with almost $7 billion in debt.
And guess who runs this company?
Why? Who does?
Oh, it's only one of the richest men in the world.
Uh-huh.
And, he wants government bailout.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's starting to fold on that a bit, offering up his, or maybe one of his islands
mm-hmm.
that's worth some money. It's like, oh, you maybe have some assets you could use to fund this.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they have a bunch of aircraft that are essentially surrounded by construction equipment at the Perth airport to keep them from getting out.
Mm-hmm.
With it, because they owe the Perth airport especially a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, $6.8 billion to more than 12,000 creditors, including employees, banks, aircraft manufacturers, or aircraft financiers and landlords.
Mm-hmm.
This board decided to appoint administrators last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
that much debt.
Mm-hmm.
Not as well. Sorry, but...
Got to spend money to make money.
Mm.
But yeah, let's see. They knocked back a final plea to the federal government in Australia for $200 million in assistance, far less than the $1.4 billion they wanted initially.
Mm.
So even they're kind of crumbling to get what the help they expect. Because people are like, hey... You guys are run by Richard Branson.
Yeah.
He's one of the most well-known rich people out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can see like what his worth is.
Yeah, well.
So while you're doing... his internet worth. Yeah. $4.1 billion, as it says.
Yeah.
Which on the internet still is not 100% accurate either.
Yeah.
But still, he's wealthy enough to probably sell some of his assets.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. The Virgin Group has a shit ton of businesses they're involved in.
Mm-hmm.
I assume they might not still have Virgin Records or anything like that. They were in space travel for a while. A lot of hotels and all this shit. It's like, yeah, you could probably take a look at the bulk of what Virgin is doing and maybe cut the shit that ain't working. Because especially this time, nobody wants to travel. Or nobody's allowed to travel. Yeah. Nobody wants to travel in a metal tube breathing the same air that other people are breathing.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Germany has canceled Oktoberfest, which, funny enough, actually happens in September. Also, Spain is canceling the running of the bulls as well.
Yep.
Well, that's...
That next one is a good thing because that whole fucking tradition is stupid, but no Oktoberfest?
I'm surprised there haven't been riots.
Yeah, I'm surprised Germany hasn't been just engulfed in flames because of this.
Yeah, I believe Spain's tomato throwing festival is also being canceled. Some of our stupid people throwing fruit at each other. But yeah. Some events that hopefully their cancellation gets people to realize, hey, this shit is serious.
Yeah.
They're not canceling these things just for the hell of it.
Also, the running of the bulls is dumb.
Yeah. And also... The National Spelling Bee was canceled for the first time in 75 years.
But could they what do you think it was? Yeah. So, do you know what the last time they were canceled for?
I wonder what. Let's see. It was 75 years ago. I'm going to say World War II.
Yep. Yeah, so this is... I think they've said they're going to have it for next year. At least they're planning it right now.
Mm-hmm.
June 1st to 3rd, 2021. But they're not changing eligibility. So the kids that would have been, this would have been like their last year of eligibility. They're screwed out of getting in this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a weird event, but whatever.
Yeah. All right, and this next one, so that's the end of the COVID-19 dump truck for this episode. Get ready for next week when we back up and get a fresh load for you, because we're going to have one.
Yeah.
And
there's always a load for you.
Yeah. And for this next part, I'm just going to shift it over to Pat, because apparently there's some shit going down with Utah's Amber Alert system. Because it's fucked, apparently.
Yeah. So last year we had an Amber Alert go out in the state of Utah that became more well known for its content than for the kid that they were trying to find, which thankfully they did through other means. But it's a good thing too, because if it had been up to the Amber Alert system, you would have had an entire state with nothing but GRYTOYT to go on.
Retweet.
That is the entire content of the Amber Alert, and the memes are still coming in today.
Yeah.
But not to be outdone, in 2020, in the dead of night, no less, many of us were woken up to that Amber Alert.
Horrible sound that comes from...
We'll say what it is. It's ear violated.
Yeah.
By the Amber Alert.
You know that
Alert.
Sound that they make on the radio when they do the national weather alert?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, but somehow more shrill.
Yeah. So, not to be outdone, in the dead of night, a few nights ago, a Utah Amber Alert went out with absolutely no content to speak of. It was blank. Up to now, I still have no idea what it was about. But it went out there, and, you know, if it was actually about somebody, I hope that they're okay, because clearly this system is failing people miserably. And hopefully the staffing there can get revisited, because this is, frankly, a danger to people. They're endangering people by this sort of thing even being possible. So, yeah, the state of Utah just has to get its shit together on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Could be worse. At least it's not a missile alert.
That's true.
Like Hawaii had.
I wonder if it's the same people who ended up here after that whole debacle, and they're just... Yeah, that would actually make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, next up, Australia is now going to require that Facebook and Google share the advertising revenue with the media.
Oh, what a concept.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in, you know, like what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook and Google being able to just kind of, you know, give you the summary of whatever's going on without you having to go straight to the source.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of definitely not the greatest thing for various sites out there, even if they're fake sites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised.
I don't know how successful they're going to be in getting this money, but
yeah,
at least trying something.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised this isn't the case everywhere, but that's just another part of what makes living in this day and age just great.
just great.
Bizarre.
Anyway, next up, Warner Brothers has revealed a bunch of new dates for a bunch of its DC movies and other stuff, because... like everything else, everything had to get fucking delayed.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, so the Batman got pushed from June 25th next year to October 1st, 2021, which was... it's 2 years after the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Released here. And let's see, The Flash, that movie is still happening. It's going to be actually going a month earlier. On June 3rd in 2022, which was going to be, Shazam, which was dated April 1st, 2022, is now going to be November 4th. Disney, they're just comparing to other dates. They got an Elvis Presley movie that's supposed to be starring Tom Hanks that had the October 1st date. That Batman has now. That'll be November 5th, 2021, which will be around the same time as Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Sopranos feature prequel, The Many Saints of Newark, which was going to be September 25th of this year. It's going to be March 12th, 2021, which will be going against Disney's animated movie Raya and the Last Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, the Will Smith drama King Richard,
mm-hmm.
which was shooting in L.A., is now going to be November 19th, 2021, instead of November 25th this year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, that'll be around the same time as Paramount's Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another one of those.
Yeah. Let's see. Lisa Joy's.
One that doesn't suck.
Yeah, Lisa Joy's. Hugh Jackman, Thandie Newton, Rebecca Ferguson sci-fi movie Reminiscence. It's April 16th, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be now competing with Lin-Manuel Miranda's Sony Pictures animation movie musical Vivo.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, undated for now, Shaka King's entitled Fred Hampton movie about the Black Panther Party member.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be August 21st this year.
Wait, who is it? Who is it again?
Shaka King.
Oh, yeah.
For Fred Hampton. Mm-hmm. As it was going to have Daniel Kaluuya as Fred Hampton, alongside Lakeith Stanfield, Martin Sheen, Lil Rel Howery, mm-hmm. and Jesse Plemons. So you're going to wait a bit longer for some of those movies.
Yeah. Yeah, Fred Hampton, his whole story is a freaking... He was legit murdered by the United States government. Mm-hmm. There is no other way to say it. He was murdered by our government while he was sleeping in his bed in the dead of night next to, I believe, his pregnant girlfriend. Yeah. Anyway, Sony is delaying their Venom sequel, and it's actually, they're delaying it to 2021, and it's also got a new name.
And it's called Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Just in case you need to know what's new about this one.
Okay.
It'll be out October 2nd next year, or no. It was going to come out October 2nd this year. It was now June 25th next year.
Hmm.
Which was where the Batman was originally going to be at.
So they're just shuffling around the production slots.
Yeah. And yeah, they haven't really shown too much of this new movie yet, so it's kind of what they're doing for the time being. But yeah, so people know Carnage is going to be in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Featured in that, so it's going to be interesting to see.
I mean, by the way, anybody who's wondering who's going to be playing Carnage.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, it's Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Yeah. Because he shows up at the very end of the first Venom movie.
Yeah.
Which was... meh.
Yeah, it wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen. It was fine.
Yeah, it wasn't Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually did well.
No, I heard it was fun if you take it for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up...
Andy Serkis is directing this one.
Oh. Yeah. That's going to be weird to see. All right. Next up, they're also delaying their next two Spider-Man movies as well.
Yep. The sequel to Spider-Man.
That's going to cause a cluster
fuck, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yes. The sequel to Spider-Man Far From Home was going to be November 5th, 2021. It is November 5th, 2021 from what they were playing July 16th, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So... that puts a little bit of twist in Marvel's plans, but not really too much because they're basically moving all their stuff back too.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse's sequel has been moved from April 8th, 2022 to October 7th,
2022. Mm-hmm.
Which is a good bit there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And... next up there, we know there's a new Star Wars series that's coming in the works for Disney Plus from one of the creators of Russian Doll, which that's the web series. If you've not seen it, you really should.
Yeah, it's really good. It's Leslie Headland.
Mm-hmm.
They have a video clip here of where she was at the premiere for Rise of the Skywalker, basically saying, I don't have a favorite Star Wars movie. I just like Star Wars. As a whole, which...
See, I think that's actually a healthy attitude to have.
Yeah.
Because once you get too much into it, you end... Yeah, because once you get too into it, you end up becoming one of those actually people.
Yeah.
And we're like, how dare they make female characters interesting in The Last
Jedi? Yeah. And to be honest, Star Wars fandom is already just the absolute worst.
Yeah, because you got nerds from the 70s growing...
Yeah,
with it, and then their kids get into it. Yeah. And, like
it becomes a cult, basically.
I mean, there's literally a religion based on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see where that happens. And finally, yeah.
So that's supposed to be female led on that. So she's going to continue what she did with Russian Doll.
Oh man, so, they are not gonna the same hate style. That.
But, probably not the same style, but still being female led.
Yeah, they're gonna hate it. Oh, they're gonna hate it. She could come out and it could be just as good as The Mandalorian, and they will still hate it.
She's gonna have the female lead just kill Baby Yoda.
Yeah,
right away.
And then she's gonna go and kill all the white people in the cast.
Just to show how much she gives a fuck about you.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe the heroine will take out, you know, Darth Vader's helmet and take a dump in it while giving you the finger.
Yeah.
Just to drive the message home.
I don't know what Star Wars series you're watching, but I want to watch this.
Yeah. Disney, if any of you are listening, look me up. I'm available. And finally, the Netflix film, The Lovebirds, will be out May 22nd. And what is the thing about this one?
So this was going to have a retail release of April 3rd. Got delayed for obvious reasons, and they just said, we're not going to bother with that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Just put it out on Netflix. This is the Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani romantic comedy, where they're kind of driving around, and some dude on a bike drives by, and this guy pulls up, runs up to the car saying he's a cop, that's a criminal, we need to go get him, and proceeds to take over driving the car, runs over the dude, and then disappears, and they get framed for his murder. And so this couple is essentially on the run, trying to figure out how to prove this like weird conspiracy, and all the while it's like a comedy and all that. Kind of crazy thing, and seems like it's could be pretty cool. They had some weird announcement for this where Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae were FaceTiming with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, just gonna look at Netflix, see what's on there, kind of thing. Oh, look, it's this Lovebirds movie. It's coming out May 22nd. I think Issa Rae jokes about him not being able to eat any carbs because of Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff with that. And I guess they also acquired the global rights to the drama movie The Starling, the Melissa McCarthy movie. So yeah, they're still making moves.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that right. Just as a reminder, that movie that we talked about a couple weeks back, Extraction, is out today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I know what I'm watching.
So. All right. And I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Yep.
So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or really any other kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there yet, well, just wait a few minutes. I mean, what the fuck else are you going to do? Live?
Yeah, some more important things than that.
Yes. Because we got to get our economy going again. By the way, speaking of economy, next week our show is going to be falling on May Day.
Oh, Troy.
That's going to be fun.
You know what's 3 days later? It's the 50th anniversary of the Kent State shootings.
Mm. Oh, my, yes.
We'll see how much people are willing to talk about Star Wars on that day.
Yeah. So expect us to be talking openly about things like communism and the workers' uprising and the eventual death of the bourgeois. It's going to be fun shit. Yeah. And with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Tologi, good night, sleep tight, and remember to cover your mouth when you cough, you filthy, filthy animals.